Writing a bill that says you can take all the money out of state if you want is not as smart as writing a bill that says you only get the tax breaks if you put more oil in the pipeline.
House lawmakers debate the governor's oil tax proposal. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans rally to support the state's Choose Respect initiative.
Violence is a learned behavior, so the good news is you can unlearn it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. AASB believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD. Paper applications are available at the same 270 statewide locations as last year. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Attorneys for former Alaska lawmaker Bruce Weirach are asking a federal judge for access to evidence they contend shows prosecutorial misconduct. His attorneys say they have an obligation to report misconduct to the Alaska Bar Association. Today's filing seeks permission to send the bar evidence now under seal. It doesn't specify which prosecutors Weirach's attorneys believe acted inappropriately. The government dropped a federal case against Weirach under a deal that had him pleading to a state misdemeanor count. Weirach vigorously denied the federal charges against him, and one of his attorneys said prosecutors withheld evidence in his case. The State House today opened debate on a tax proposal Governor Sean Parnell hopes will increase jobs and production in the state's oil fields. Final debate is scheduled for tonight. Members so far have rejected three amendments. With few exceptions, voting was along strict caucus lines. Anchorage Democrat Les Guerra said all the minority amendments had one common goal, to get a return for the money the oil companies will get in lower taxes. He said the governor's bill would provide $6 billion over the next 5 years in incentives for the industry, and it sets no requirements from the industry.
You can either write a bill that's based on a hope, wing, and a prayer that the oil companies will just give you the money back even though they're allowed to take it out of state. Or writing a bill that says you can take all the money out of state if you want is not as smart as writing a bill that says you only get the tax breaks if you increase production, hire Alaskans, put more oil in the pipeline.
The version of the bill on the floor today is not exactly what the governor originally asked for in January, although changes made in the House Finance Committee did diminish the tax breaks the industry would receive. In their proposed amendments so far, Democrats have wanted to set goals for the industry to meet. They want the companies to disclose what they would do with any tax credits they receive and want guarantees that work would be done with the money the companies request. Also among the proposals was an amendment that would have simply expired the governor's changes in 2014. Republicans objected. Anchorage's Anna Faircloth argued that a requirement to revisit the tax in 3 years would make Alaska less competitive.
What the proposed HB 110 does is ask Alaska or push Alaska towards being more competitive in a global market. It's about giving certainty when people, Alaskans, go into other corporate boardrooms and have to compete for projects globally. A 2014 sunset creates instability in a company being able to plan for their future.
The bill will be put to a vote in tonight's session. Alaskans in more than 60 communities held marches today to support Governor Sean Parnell's Choose Respect campaign. Studies show Alaska has higher rates of rape and family violence than the nation as a whole. Governor Parnell started the initiative in 2009 in an effort to reverse that trend, and he made it one of his main campaign issues last fall. Sarah Lynn Tebechek attended the Juneau rally today. She's executive director of AWARE, or Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. She said the Choose Respect campaign is helping, but there's more work to do.
Part of that is changing our culture, changing peer groups, changing peer cultures so that there are options that are readily available. Violence is a learned behavior, so the good news is you can unlearn it.
Governor Parnell helped carry a colorful Choose Respect banner at the rally at noon in downtown Anchorage. Half a dozen Native men beating hoop drums led 150 marchers to Town Square Park. In a phone interview before the rally, the governor said he wants victims and survivors of rape and domestic violence to see there is hope.
I'm also calling the men higher in this state, calling them to use our strength to protect and defend rather than to manipulate and control.
Governor, how do you respond to critics who say Choose Respect is oversimplifying a very complicated issue, similar to the criticism Nancy Reagan faced with her Just Say No campaign for drugs?
Well, I think all you have to do is look at Mothers Against Drunk Driving and their Don't Drink and Drive campaign from the 70s. You know, it used to be the norm 35 years ago that you go to a party, you drink, get in your car and drive. Now the social norm is if you see a friend who's had too much to drink, you have society's permission to tell them you're going to take their keys from them, and there's no fight in that. Well, domestic violence and sexual assault are typically such private matters that we don't speak about. But I want to give permission, and I think Alaskans want to give permission to each other to speak about these normally private matters, let people know that there's help available.
Do you think that saying Choose Respect to a violent offender is going to make a difference, or are you hoping to reach the next generation rather than those already offending?
Well, I think it's both. I certainly think that this war against this epidemic is going to be won at the younger ages. And it's going to take society, though, giving permission to make it okay to talk to your friends about it when you hear or see something that we would normally remain silent on. You know, it's these issues, we tend to just leave them in the homes. And you know, if we've got a hunting buddy with us who says something that kind of indicates that maybe something's not right in how he's treating his wife or his family, you know, it's okay to ask him for more information because you care about him. And is it going to make a difference? Well, I know it's already made a difference in lives from last year's rallies. I had quite a number of survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault write and say that they got the courage from seeing people stepping forward on television, on the news coverage. They were given enough courage to step out of their difficult and tragic circumstances into help. And they have a new life as a result of it. So if us gathering at noon results in one person experiencing life more abundantly because of what we did, then I'm willing to give a lunch and more for that.
And Governor, there's no question that this has been a big issue for you since you took office. Have you been able to measure any change in offender rates?
What we've been able to measure is community awareness is heightened. People understand that the numbers in our state are unacceptably high when it comes to domestic violence and rape. And frankly, we're going to see an uptick in reported abuse and in shelter nights, because as we let people know that their lives of fear are not the norm and should not be the norm, more come out. So there's a spike in the numbers, and we saw that in this last year. We saw in some communities where the campaign was waged heavily, we saw numbers increase, and I think we're going to see that for a couple of years until we turn the tide. So I think the proof will be 10 years, 15 years out, but you know, frankly, from an individual perspective, I've seen the proof in the emails I've received from the past year.
Governor Parnell led the rally at noon in downtown Anchorage today. Similar rallies were held across the state. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Bethel Broomball team prepares to make a statement at a Homer tournament.
I think we'll do pretty good. I think we'll surprise a bunch of people. We've been working on some shots.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Fort Wainwright will retain an aviation brigade, but the number of soldiers and aircraft in it will be reduced. The Army has announced a plan to divide the 16th Combat Aviation Brigade between Fort Wainwright and Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington. U.S. Army Alaska spokesman Major Bill Kuprenall says the 1,400-member 60 helicopter brigade will be headquartered at Lewis-McChord, but keep a substantial presence at Fort Wainwright.
Fort Wainwright will retain the vast majority of its aviation assets. The projected net impact on Fort Wainwright is expected under this split stationing option is a reduction of about 156 soldiers and 10 UH-60 helicopters.
The reduction comes as the Army plans to increase the size of other Fort Wainwright aviation resources. The state's redistricting board is in the throes of creating new voting district boundaries that will determine representation in the legislature for the next decade. A public hearing in Anchorage today brought before the board a number of suggested plans created by civic groups with widely divergent viewpoints on how to achieve redistricting while preserving minority voting strengths. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
One fact is beyond dispute. Outmigration from rural Alaska villages into Anchorage and Fairbanks during the past decade has skewed the existing voting district map. Now that the 2010 census figures have been released, the state's redistricting board is busy redrawing the lines that determine how many state House and Senate seats any one area of the state gets. Vicki Oddie is the CEO of a Native corporation. She also chaired the 2001 redistricting board. She says the 2001 plan worked, but this time she's worried.
What we have today in our legislature, you have a Senate that is made up of 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats. I believe that's a fair and balanced legislature. You look at the House, it is almost just as equal, and all of them have to cross party lines to work together. I also believe that rural Alaska is in jeopardy this year because of the shift in population.
Oddie works with Alaskans for Fair Redistricting, a nonpartisan group made up of Alaska Native corporations, unions, and other civic groups, which are concerned that rural Alaskans may not get a fair shake when the new map is drawn.
With the makeup of the board that currently sits, rural Alaska could be jeopardized.
Oddie says she's concerned that there are four Republicans on the redistricting board and only one Democrat, Alaska Native Marie Green. AFFR presented its plan to the redistricting board through Joe McKinnon. In part, the plan calls for creating two new rural districts. Each would stretch east to west across Alaska from the Canadian border to the ocean. The North Slope would remain pretty much the same, but Kodiak would be paired with Prince William Sound villages and merged into a Copper River district stretching from the Sound north to Paxson. A Bethel-based district would include Bristol Bay villages and the Aleutians. The impetus is to preserve Alaska Native voting strength under the Federal Voting Rights Act while keeping within state-mandated population requirements for House and Senate voting districts. But socioeconomic similarities must be preserved, and McKinnon had no answer for Board Chair John Torgerson's question as to how Hooper Bay and Delta Junction would be considered similar in the plan's hypothetical House District 7. Another group, Alaskans for Fair and Equitable Redistricting, presented its plan through Attorney David Mayberry, who said redistricting's effect on Southeast representation is a big concern.
The major objective for Alaskans for Fair and Equitable Redistricting was to protect the Native Voting Rights District in Southeast Alaska. The Native Influence District number 5 was 3,900 people short in its present configuration. By adding the Prince of Wales villages from District 1, Wrangell, Petersburg, and several small villages from District 2, and removing Gustavus and Tenneke Springs from District 5, AFR builds a new District 2 with 33% Alaska Natives.
The city and borough of Juneau presented a plan of its own, as did the city of Valdez. The board later opened up the meeting to comments from the public. Of course, the board's work is far from finalized, although a date of April 14th has been set for adopting a draft plan. A final plan is expected in mid-June. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
This week, Anchorage's two major electrical utilities broke ground for a natural gas-powered plant. Despite the construction cost, Chugach Electric Association and Municipal Light and Power say the facility will ultimately save consumers money. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Monday's groundbreaking ceremony featured the expected spray-painted golden shovels wielded by a pair of board members from the two utilities.
So we'll pose you out here. Okay.
There were pre-shoveling comments by the utilities as well as the contractor, plus Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan and a staff member of Alaska Senator Mark Begich, and the obligatory just-deposited nearby pile of dirt. What was different with the groundbreaking, according to the participants, was the cooperation the ceremony represented and the efficiency the South Central Power Project promises. The mayor praised the committed joint effort between Chugach Electric and MLNP.
I'm very pleased that our utilities are working together on something so critical. I mean, there's usually a fair share of concern out there that the utilities work in a vacuum and they don't work together. But this is a perfect example of working together, pulling in the right direction so that there is reliable service at a reasonable cost for Anchorage's electrical consumers.
The 183-megawatt power plant is being built adjacent to Chugach's main office and existing power plant just off International Airport Road in Minnesota Drive. It will cost approximately $370 million. Chugach Electric will cover 70%, MLNP 30%. That ratio also reflects the ownership percentage. Chugach Board Vice Chair Jim Nordlam said characterizing the South Central Power Project as building a new power plant is not really accurate.
This is a replacement power plant for our aging fleet of generators over at the Beluga Power Station. This new, more efficient generators at this plant will be 25% more efficient than our units at Beluga.
The translation from increased efficiency into savings?
That savings in natural gas from this replacement power plant at $6.75 per 1,000 cubic feet will be approximately $30 million per year. Now at approximately $300 to $400 million plant at $30 million per year savings, you can see it doesn't take that long for this plant to actually pay for itself in gas savings.
The plant will have three natural gas-fired turbine generators and one steam turbine generator. They'll operate in a combined cycle mode. That process captures the hot exhaust from the gas turbines and uses it to make steam for the steam turbine. Mike Rance represented the project's general contractor, SNC-Lavalin, headquartered in Montreal, Canada. Rance said the yet-to-be-started plant is already attracting attention for another feature.
This plant has already been talked about as one of the cleanest, environmentally friendliest plant that's ever been built. It's the latest technology.
According to information supplied by Chugach Electric, the existing simple cycle generation facilities for 183 megawatts produces annually over 4,500 tons of nitrogen oxide emissions. With the new plant, the emission for the same megawatt production drops to approximately 130 tons a year. Construction of the South Central Power Project will take place through 2012, with the plant scheduled to be commissioned in 2013. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
No other port in Alaska is building a 100 rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
You've probably heard that most of Southeast Alaska's second growth timber is decades away from harvest, but the Sea Alaska Regional Native Corporation is experimenting with some older stands of young trees. It's reporting some success with lessons for other companies thinking about joining that market. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Juneau.
Most of Sea Alaska's second growth timber is no older than the corporation itself. Thinning, brushing, and pruning have sped growth. Still, it's years away from being large enough to log. But a few stands were cut long before the Regional Native Corporation formed back in 1972. One is on Doll Island, off the outer coast of Prince of Wales Island. Sea Alaska Timber Corporation President Wade Zammit says the military used the wood for airplane construction about 70 years ago.
We chose that area particularly because it had fairly mature second growth, had developed road systems, it was close to the water, and then we integrated a traditional processor and shovel with helicopter logging.
He says it took a lot of planning and some experimenting, but the location and a quick turnaround made it profitable. Last year's logging produced 12 million board feet of timber, which were sold to China and Korea. That made up 21% of the corporation's total harvest. Sea Alaska's experience is relevant to others considering the second growth timber business. That's the direction the Forest Service and some of the region's environmental groups want to go. But timber appraiser Ray Granville cautions that the Doll Island sale is unique.
They had the infrastructure there to do it. You can't go into the very small stands of older timber that are available on the Forest Service without that infrastructure and try to do the same thing.
Granville recently inventoried younger stands of Tongass trees for the Southeast Conference. He found some older second growth forests, but they were too small or isolated to be worth harvesting.
I've seen letters from, you know, representatives, senators, congressmen, from the current administration in Washington, D.C., about forcing the industry into a second growth economy right off. And it's not there. There's no volume there to do that. Not yet. You know, it's going to take at least 40 years or more before you get there.
The Doll Island harvest taught Sea Alaska some differences between second growth and older timber. Zammit says there's a lot of competition in the international market.
It is more of a commodity, and so the second growth out of Alaska competes with the second growth out of the Pacific Northwest and out of New Zealand, and it has a lot more volatility in terms of pricing, but it has a fairly large customer base.
Sea Alaska plans another major Doll Island harvest this year. Like its other cuts and an increasing amount of Tongass timber, logs will be shipped to Asia in the round.
Now that we have proved the model out, we're looking for other areas in the ownership that we can apply this. And we're actually now looking for areas for 2012.
But it's unclear how much more second growth will be worth logging that soon. Like the Tongass, most of Sea Alaska stands still have decades before they're ready to harvest. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Bethel boasts the only broomball team from rural Alaska that will be competing at the state tournament in Homer this weekend. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Bethel's broomball team practices twice a week on a pond that's not always smooth ice, but it's usually available twice a week if they can keep it cleared of snow. The sport of broomball is an evolution of hockey. Teams usually have six players, including the goalie. But in Bethel, it's about having fun and not all about game rules.
It's sort of more of a club at this point. We don't have actual teams.
That's Luke Vanas, who helps coordinate the club.
So on any given day, it could be from, you know, 8 to 16 rarely do we have subs. We'll play, sometimes we'll play 5-on-5, or we'll play 7-on-7, or even 8-on-8, and just, you know, everybody wants to play, nobody wants to sit out, so.
But that doesn't mean the players don't have skills.
We've been kind of a core group, been playing together for 4 years, so that helps.
Ross Dury got the ball rolling, so to speak, 4 years ago in Bethel when he thought up the idea of Bethel Broomball.
I think we'll do pretty good. I think we'll surprise a bunch of people. We kind of know each other's playability and strengths, and we've been working on some shots.
Dury's from Minnesota and used to play hockey there, but he says broomball is a good alternative for the general public.
Basically, for people that never picked up hockey with skates, they could get out there in their shoes and play a similar sport.
Dury says broomball is a bit like hockey and a bit like soccer. The goalie net is 6 foot by 8 foot. Broomball used to be literally played with brooms and regular street clothes. The brooms eventually turned into sticks with a sort of paddle on the end, and the shoes have special sucker-type soles.
With the shoes, if you have good eyes with the shoes, then, you know, it's not like playing on a basketball court, but you'd be surprised how much traction you can get from it.
Both Dury and Vinas worked to get a few small grants from local agencies so the team could get the basic equipment to play. The team's name, the Bethel Beavers, sort of happened on its own. Vinas says it came from the retro Boston Bruins hockey jerseys they ordered.
And the company had a generic logo of a beaver that they could put on there. And so, you know, we got Bethel on the front in diagonal letters and then beaver logo on the side. And we just figured with all the beavers out here, it's perfect.
And yes, the club does have a few cheers up their sleeve as well.
We got fever. Yes, we do. We got fever. How about you?
The state broomball tournament takes place in Homer April 2nd and 3rd. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. To protect our environment, dispose of medication safely at an authorized community medication disposal event or follow these steps. 1. Place medications in a sealable plastic bag with coffee grounds or kitty litter. 2. Add water to dissolve the medications. 3. Seal the bag and place in the trash. The Alaska Safe Medication Alliance and the Drug Enforcement Administration are hosting medication disposal events statewide on April the 30th. Visit www.akila.org/rx. This message is sponsored by South Central Foundation. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD and consider sharing a portion with your favorite charity through Pick, Click, Give. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.